The Business Couch with Dr. Yishai, episode 87. Welcome to The Business Couch with Dr. Yishai. I'm your host, Dr. Yishai Barkadari, psychologist and adaptability coach to entrepreneurs and business leaders. I believe that working on your business is more important than working in your business. If you want to achieve your business goals and dreams without the cost and pain of having to make every mistake yourself, then The Business Couch with Dr. Yishai is the podcast for you. I'm here to help you learn from the lessons of entrepreneurs and business leaders to help you work on yourself and your business so that you can save time, energy, and grow faster. For those of you new to the show, The Business Couch with Dr. Yishai presents 3 new episodes each week. On Insight Sunday, we dive into the minds of business leaders through insightful guest interviews. On Story Tuesday, we dig deeper with them and learn firsthand from their stories, hard-earned lessons, and experience. On Thrive Thursday, it's just you and me on the couch, where you'll hear scientific research, my thoughts, and tangible tactics to adapt and grow yourself and your business. Grab a proverbial seat and listen up so you can learn from the minds and mistakes of business leaders and apply their wisdom to your life and business. Welcome to Thrive Thursday with Dr. Yishai. This week on The Business Couch with Dr. Yishai, I had Maurice Hoffman, author of Roadmap to Marketing Success, a serial entrepreneur, founder of the New York Marketing Academy, and global vice president of customer success at Open Exchange Inc., also known as OX. Insight Sunday's conversation was so jam-packed that I just had to share it with you in 2 parts. On Insight Sunday, Maurice shared his story from being a pre-teen entrepreneur to generate pocket money, all the way through joining the army and being involved in psychology operations to founding multiple companies and rising in the ranks of leadership. On Insight Tuesday, our conversation continued with Maurice sharing stories and how they shaped his thought process, teaching him to think, engage with, and learn from everyone in ways that formed the core of his leadership and entrepreneurial endeavors. If you haven't yet, go back and listen to episodes 85 and 86 to learn from an expert marketer, leader, and entrepreneur who shares lessons from his army experience in PsyOps that you can learn for your marketing. After my conversation with Maurice, I'm going to deep dive into empathy and its role in entrepreneurship. Whether you're a solopreneur, a small business owner, or leader of a mid-sized company or even large corporation, understanding the role of empathy both inside your business and customer-facing engagement can make all the difference. Before we dive in, I wanted to share that The Business Couch with Dr. Yishai is brought to you by Adaptability Coaching and Consulting. If you lead a 7+ figure business and want to reach the next level for yourself and your business, if you have passions, goals, and dreams and want to continue to strive as a team, a leader, and a visionary without risking burnout, if you have overcome challenges, developed wisdom, and know that adapting is not just for surviving, but a core part of thriving, then adaptability coaching is for you. With psychology and neuroscience-backed tools, the 3D adaptation framework can show you how to tap into and harness the way our brains are uniquely designed for adaptation. You can learn to harness and leverage adaptability tools and frameworks to grow yourself and your company. You can learn to become fast, flexible, and formidable. You can learn to hone yourself further, to proactively adapt, to thrive, instead of reactively adapting, just to survive. To learn more, go to dryishai.com/coaching. And now, without further ado, let's dive into empathy in entrepreneurship. Will you help me? In so many ways, this is the foundational question of so many, if not most, relationships. Not just between parents and children, partners, or friends, but also between an employee and their boss, an entrepreneur and their teams, between a customer and the business they are buying from. Because at the core of practically every relationship is the meeting of each other's needs. Sometimes it can be quite transactional, like grabbing takeout from a restaurant. Other times it's much more complex and involved, like making the choice to commit to a long-term relationship, even a marriage, and build a future or family together. At the core of meeting each other's needs is that very question. Will you help me get delicious food at a low time and energy investment? Will you help me create a successful business out of my restaurant? These are the questions that the takeout customer and the restaurant owner ask each other. Even if they don't do that verbally, it's the question their actions pose to one another. Though much of their relationship can be seen as transactional, they're fulfilling each other's needs, helping each other. But how aware are they of this process? If we dig deeper, what insights can we uncover to take into our everyday lives and businesses? And that brings us to the complicated and keystone of relationship building called empathy. In her mind-blowing and incredibly popular TED Talk on empathy and connection, Brené Brown distinguishes between sympathy and empathy in the following way. Sympathy is like looking down at someone else's misfortune, as if they're the one who fell into a pit and you're comfortable at ground level looking down at them. It is detached and can be experienced as pitying, condescending, or patronizing. We don't feel as connected when we encounter sympathy versus when we receive empathy. And to dig into that, by contrast, empathy is about joining a person in their experience rather than standing on the high ground, at a distance and away from their misfortune. But even empathy is a complex concept. In fact, according to Paul Ekman, who's an emotion empathy researcher, and Daniel Goleman, who is a leading psychologist, there are three types of empathy that show up in research and in practice. One is called cognitive empathy, which is all about perspective taking, or your ability to view the situation through someone else's eyes, kind of like stepping into their shoes, but just in the sense of being able to understand what they're experiencing. In psychology research, that concept is called theory of mind, and in development, it happens somewhere around 3 or 4 years old, when children start to be able to think about what someone else may know or may not know and view from their perspective. It's actually a really important developmental milestone and a big part of being able to think about what somebody else knows or wants or may not want and take action accordingly. One of the risks of this cognitive empathy, though, is that it can show up as a lack of expressed and perceived caring, meaning it can come off as being from a distance or even disconnected. In fact, this theory of mind is the basis of being able to do things like lie, where a person is intentionally deceiving or giving somebody the perception of something, with the understanding of how my words will lead to somebody else having a particular perception. So cognitive empathy might even play a role in sympathy, because sympathy is an understanding of somebody else's position, but standing ourselves at a distance or at the top of the pit, whereas the unfortunate soul is sitting and wallowing at the bottom of the pit. Which leads us to the second type of empathy called emotional empathy. Emotional empathy is about experiencing what the other person is experiencing, kind of like a joint experience. It's when our witnessing someone else lends us to physically and emotionally and mentally experience their discomfort, distress, joy, or triumph. There's some research that indicates that we actually have cells in our brain that are designed to mirror or mimic what we experience or perceive other people are feeling. Those brain cells are called mirror neurons. And those mirror neurons may be the birthplace of this emotional empathy for us to experience what others are experiencing. However, emotional empathy is not without its own risk. For some people, they can get overwhelmed by that experience. If you've ever talked to someone and found them getting even more distressed than you are, or they're getting really upset when you're sharing something about your own upset, you'll notice what is often called a kind of overload or overwhelm in that emotional empathy, which is called empathic distress. for doctors, one of the things that they talk about is being able to cultivate a kind of emotional distance from challenges, losses, difficulties that their patients experience. And when it comes to considering being a therapist or a psychologist as a career, so many people talk about how taking home the concerns, the issues, the struggles, the feelings, the challenges of the patients can really impact them and is something that is a very significant part of training, to not just take that home and become overwhelmed by it, or even become overwhelmed by it in the moment. Because when we are in empathic distress, when we are overloaded by our mirror neurons creating that joint experience and it's too much for us, we lack that capacity or we struggle to hold it, or it's overwhelming us, then it can absolutely get in the way of being able to be present or caring or helpful to the other person. Now our own distress is taking over the situation for ourselves and potentially for that other person as well. And that brings us to compassionate empathy, which is in research, the other side of the coin to empathic distress is when somebody is instead resonating and experiencing a sense of connection and caring without overwhelm. And that's also known as empathic resonance. Empathic resonance, in addition to being about having a sense of connecting and caring without getting personally overwhelmed, is also a really significant factor in helping behavior, which brings us to a classic research study done in 1973 by Darley and Batson, who were researchers who were looking at altruistic and helping behavior. And what they did was they took students who were in a theological seminary and asked them to do some tasks, one of which was to prepare a sermon on a topic. And they either assigned the Good Samaritan as a topic or some other random biblical topic. And then after giving them time to prepare for a few minutes and then ship them off to the next task that they had to do. But they did a couple of critical things in between. One is that they either told the student that they have extra time, that they're cutting it a bit close on time, or that they're already late to their next task. And then they set up a test along the way. You see, the researchers had somebody in distress in the alleyway calling out for help as they were passing. And the question was, who would stop? Overall, 40% of the students stopped to help. But there was one really interesting factor that contributed to whether or not they chose to stop. And as it turns out, it wasn't whether or not they were doing a sermon on the Good Samaritan. The biggest factor was how much time pressure they thought they were under. You see, a full 63% of the students who were told they have extra time chose to stop and help. Whereas among those who were told they're cutting it close, only 45% stopped to help. And for those in a hurry, a measly 10% stopped to help someone who was expressing distress and asking for help. In a way, the question posed by the actor who was feigning distress was the very same question we started with. Will you help me? Which brings us back to the three components of empathy. Number one, understanding the perspective and experience of others. Number two, joining in the experience and experiencing it ourselves. And number three, feeling connected and compelled to help. Each piece is important, and some research suggests that they build upon each other. If we don't experience interconnectedness and the impulse to help, and if others don't experience that from us, then it can lead to a very different answer to that question. Sometimes even if we're taking the actions that would be perceived or experienced as helpful. Just like if you order from a restaurant and they rush you out without double checking your order and they get it wrong. Or if your company is constantly demanding more and dumping more work on your teams without listening and responding to what they need in order to do their job in a consistent, high-quality, sustainable way. The answer to, will you help me, can make the difference between whether someone stays a customer or strays to your competition. whether your employee does their best work or puts in the absolute minimum effort, whether your teams stick together and are invested long-term or are looking for opportunities elsewhere. Here are some key takeaways and tactics that you can use so that you can have more of your people and more of your customers or clients experience the answer to their question of, will you help me, as a resounding yes. First, it's really important to understand what happens when you only have some components of empathy, but not all of them. For example, if all you have is the understanding or the cognitive component of empathy, it can be perceived as condescending, patronizing, pitying, or ultimately sympathy. So it's important to show that you are joining and understanding what's important to them and what their experience is. At the same time, if you show that you cognitively understand what it is that they're experiencing, and even if you join them, but that joining leads to a distress or overwhelm for you and then becomes the problem of the customer or of your teams, then that can also be very off-putting. In fact, it can add more problems than it solves. One example of that is when you put a product on the market and you start getting reviews back and they're negative reviews or feedback, and that leads you or the leadership to become overwhelmed with the challenges and the feedback or even the experience that the customer is having. Though I also want to acknowledge that when we put a product on the market, we may personally be invested, and some of that reaction might not just be about empathizing with the customer or the client who is not getting the most out of it or struggling still, but can also be our own reaction because we're invested in this. The question and the point I'd like for you to think about and to start implementing is, how do you show that you're connected on top of just understanding what the customer or your teams are experiencing? And beyond that, how do you display that you will put your time, energy, and effort, that you are here to answer that question, will you help me, with an immediate, no pause, absolutely resounding yes, that's exactly what I'm here to do. I am here to help you. Because if you can do that consistently, what you will find is, one, that you are listening, learning, and understanding about what your customers and your teams need. And two, they will experience you as being invested, caring about, and taking care of their needs and helping them. Again, at the core of so many relationships is that question of, will you help me, and meeting each other's needs. And the more you focus on and work on that, the more your teams, your customers, your clients are going to experience you as somebody they can turn to. And that's how those relationships strengthen. It's the reason that they will continue to come to you. And also the reason that you can sometimes turn to them and say, will you give me what I need? And on that note, I'll see you next week. Thanks for joining us today on The Business Couch with Dr. Yishai. If you enjoyed today's episode, take a moment to rate and review the podcast. It helps grow the show and gives more people like you the ability to learn and grow. You can also click the share button to share today's episode directly with someone you know who would enjoy it. The Business Couch with Dr. Yishai podcast artwork is made by Sam Barkadari, show notes by Yishai Barkadari, and music by www.purple-planet.com. The advice and opinions of the host and guests are our own. I'm a psychologist, but not your psychologist. The conversations and content of this podcast do not contain or create any psychology practice, diagnosis, or therapist-patient relationship with either the guest or the listener. So do your own research before using anything from this podcast. Thank you for listening. Remember, our thoughts and reactions affect our actions. By listening, we can learn from the challenges others face and the choices they make, so that we can make better decisions and get better results.